Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step.
Ali Valentin, welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. I'm so excited to have you as a guest. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh my goodness. I am so, so excited to be here. I have been a listener of this podcast, so it's fun to be on this side of it.
I'm so honored that you listened. So it's very exciting to have you. And we are actually, when I was living in Reading, we were workout buddies. So we would see each other and we would have these little sidebar conversations after our very sweaty workout.
Yes. It is the best. I was thinking, I began to be like, man, it's been a long time since Ella's been here. And then I heard through the grapevine, she's back in Australia.
Yes.
I've been missing you this summer.
I know. I think it's probably, we worked out like probably 4 or 5 times a week at the same class. So yes, very fun, and miss that and miss our conversations. We'd always like have these catch ups after our workout.
That's why you go to workout classes. Exactly.
But I'm so excited to have you on the podcast because I think in the midst of our workouts and we had these conversations, we've had many conversations about like content and putting ourselves out there and all of that. And I remember you were talking about doing an insecurity detox. And I was thinking a lot about our need for security as humans. And I was like, I'm going to get Ali on the podcast to talk about cultivating security and all of that. But how about you tell us a little bit about who you are and just a bit of your story in a nutshell?
Yes. Oh my goodness. Okay. In a nutshell, well, I'm originally from Los Angeles, California. And I always say, though I grew up in a massive city, I really grew up in quite a small little Christian bubble. Then I went off to, so it's like private Christian schools, church every Sunday, even though, you know, surrounded by this big bustling city with lots of different types of people and types of beliefs and all the things. And in college, I went off to a major public university and in LA. And I remember having this thought one of my first days on campus, oh, this is what they mean when they're talking about the world. And it was one of the first times that kind of that small little bubble I grew up in was just completely shattered. And I went about a journey of who am I? What am I? What is the world? What do I believe? Long story short, I have always known the Lord, loved the Lord, grew up believing in Him. But in that process, really went on a journey of discovering who the Lord was for me and what my relationship looked like outside of that little bubble I grew up in. And I ended up here in Redding, California, where obviously I've met Ella, and I attended ministry school. And that completely changed my life. Like who I was back when I graduated from college and came up here until now feels like a completely different person. And I have a lot that I attribute to coming to ministry school. But while in ministry school, I met my husband, and he's originally from Redding, California. So we are here now. We live here, have our house and all of our little farm animals that we are slowly but surely gathering. So yeah, once was a city girl and now I don't know what I am, turned small town farm girl. I don't know, but we're doing it. We have some sheep.
And you do it well. You have a very beautiful home. And
been to my house.
Yeah, we've had dinner.
Yes,
it's very beautiful. You've got this beautiful lifestyle there.
Oh my goodness. Well, it feels like an experiment, but we're doing it. So yes, living up here and loving life up here, and it's been good.
Yeah, and I'd love our audience to go check you out on Instagram because you just have the best reels about marriage and being like in, you know, navigating all of that, and you're so authentic and real, and it's so, I love seeing everything that you post. But you have a marketing background, right? Don't you?
Yes.
Is that what you studied in LA?
No, you know what's wild is I actually studied international development studies. And then landed an internship, yeah, in marketing and kind of stuck with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy. And then you, just so our audience know, you have a truly living mentorship and you have, and then you run something called Date Well, is that right?
Yes. Yeah, I guess I should give all the shout outs to all the little things. Yeah, but yes,
tell us a bit more about what you do.
What do you do now? That's great. Yes. Well, thank you. That's where you're from. So last year I started a program called Truly Living Mentorship, and I'm sure we'll get into some more of my story during this conversation today, but it kind of really came from this idea, or really this, like, looking back on that previous self that I was talking about that I can't even recognize anymore, going, what did she need in that season?
Yes.
And this mentorship really birthed from that. Like, I wish that as a younger girl, as a younger woman, that I had somebody in my life that I could just be really honest with. Maybe just wasn't the expert, but was a space that was safe that could always lead me back to truth. And so that's kind of where the idea of the Truly Living Mentorship came from. It's a 6-week long mentorship where I meet with girls one-on-one bi-weekly and they receive video content. And it all is, you know, unto the point of ultimately helping women step into the fullness of their God-given identity and feel alive in the fullness of who they've been created to be. And so that's a bit about the mentorship. It's felt like a little passion project and it's been really fun in this last season. And then yes, as well, I help lead a program, which Ella's actually come and spoken to girls before, which is such a gift. It's with More Revolution, which is an organization here, that their mission is all about, sharing a different story about sexuality in today's day and age. And then often we hear from the world, quote unquote, and they have a program called Date Well Women, which is basically a community and course where women come to learn how to date well, do relationship well. And that ultimately looks like with themselves, others, and the Lord. It happens to kind of all be all together, because in order to date well, you kind of need a good relationship with all those other parts of relationship.
Yes, that's so good. Yeah. I love it. And you are such a warm, beautiful human that's like full of authority as well. Like, I think sometimes when we think of someone having authority, we feel like, you know, they have to be a certain age or have a certain amount of degrees, but you have really, and I've just, you know, from knowing your story, just done a lot of work on yourself and taken a lot of ground. And you really are an authority. And I feel like you just have such a gentle voice into people's hearts, in unlocking people's hearts. So guys, go check that out. But I love that you talk about the significant years of college, because I was in my own little Christian bubble. I went to a Christian school as well. And then I went to drama school to be an actress. And
I can imagine.
So you kind of... And it wasn't like a huge culture shock, but it was like definitely different. And then it's interesting because you went to college. I also went to college, and then I went to ministry school as well. And I went to ministry school about 25. How old were you when you went to ministry school?
Like 22, 23.
Yeah. So yeah, I think even just like in those early 20s, like when you come out of like your family home and you go to college, like those are very, I remember probably the early 20s were probably, I mean, I've definitely had hard seasons since, but I think they're very disorienting, like where you don't really know who you are, but you think you know who you are. And it's, I don't know, a lot of your beliefs are tested. And so tell me a little bit about, and I remember, I know what you mean when going to ministry, it's like everything changes, like your view of yourself, your view of God, like you know, all of those beautiful things, shift. And I think like for me, for sure, it was like an open door into another way of existing in the world. I know that that's what happened for me, moving countries and going to this school. But tell me a bit about like how insecurity like showed up for you in those earlier years.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. In my earlier years, it's funny because I was kind of like simmering on this before we even jumped on this call, and thinking about my younger self, I actually, what's funny is I think of the stereotypical insecure person that we might think about. And I don't think I actually came across as that stereotypical insecure person. I actually remember getting compliments when I was younger, like in high school and in college. Like, I seemed so confident, right? I was like in student government and captain of the soccer team. Like, I did all the things that attributed to leadership and being confident. But the internal world that was all sitting on was not secure. And so I think for me, it actually showed up in maybe not your average or typical insecure ways that you might think of. A little bit of my early, you know, teenage, young adult years were really rough, like you shared. And a lot of it is probably comes from lots of different things, but a little bit of my story is that when I was at the end of high school, I really started to struggle with an eating disorder. And I remember thinking in the time, like, I don't know if this is, you know, all adds up just to my, all the pressures of the world of what a woman is supposed to look like, right? I think that there's a level of pressure that we often feel as women in today's society to look a certain way. But the longer that I've really processed that season with the Lord and sat with that, I actually think it had so much more to do with my very own internal personal world and what it was rooted in and sitting in, and really like the lack of tools that I had to work through some of those belief systems that I had and some of those thoughts about myself that I held on to, right? Like, that, nothing about that was confident and secure. That was a lot of insecure is how I felt. I felt really insecure in myself. And so actually how I began to cope was kind of in ways that kept me from having to confront that face to face. So insecurity for me looked like becoming the best at everything, right? The best soccer player, the best student, the whatever it was. I just decided that in order for nobody to see what's actually going on inside of me, what I'm actually dealing with, I am going to just become the best at everything. I'm just going to become overly committed, overly busy, overly all the things. And so I think externally, it looked very, very different than actually what was going on internally. Internally is where that insecurity was robbing me. And externally, I was doing a lot of different things to cope with how insecure I felt on the inside.
Yeah.
Does that answer your questions a little
bit? Oh, yeah. Amazingly. Okay. And I think, you know, I heard that there was research around, you know, women and why they commit suicide. And a lot of it comes from body image and the way they look. And that's definitely been a pain point in my own life that I've had to like really work on. I just need to cough for 1 second, so I'm gonna like edit this out. I'm like recovering from a cold.
No,
I know, but I could feel it rattling, and I'm like, I just need to
like get it out, let it out.
Anyway, so but I think a big thing for women is working through the societal pressure. And I can imagine just even the atmosphere in Los Angeles is very image conscious. So it's something in the atmosphere. And then sometimes just even how we're wired and programmed as women. And I think, you know, probably social media was coming about in your time as a teenager. So you're navigating like comparison and all of that. Can you like flesh out a little bit about, you talked about like coping through like, because people think of like cope? Sometimes, like, it's really interesting because it sounds like your default was to go into performance. Like,
yes,
I'm going to be the best. And then there's like the other extreme of how insecurity can manifest of like, I'm completely giving up. Yes. And not even trying at all because what's the point? I'm not that great. So tell me a little bit more about these coping mechanisms. It sounds like a little bit connected to control and that kind of thing. So tell me, just to flesh it out for our listeners.
Totally. Yeah, I think you're, how you've explained that is like hitting it head on, because I think for me for a long time, it didn't feel like coping, because what we think about often as being coping might look like turning to some sort of substance or some sort of addiction that kind of numbs us from the reality. But yeah, my coping mechanisms were acceptable by society, right? They were trying really hard, working really hard, working out really hard, running marathons. Like it was anything to escape the reality of my internal world and busy myself. So for me, coping, what's hard is it actually led me to the same place as a lot of those other sort of coping mechanisms, right? Because I think those things can be good in your life if they're rooted in something that's good. If working out is rooted in love, if working hard is rooted in love, it's going to produce love. If working out is rooted in self-hatred and fear, it's going to have that same effect on your body on your soul. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately it became pretty apparent that it wasn't just like any sort of just I'm trying to be healthy or I'm trying to be a better person. It was like compulsive, obsessive. It was extreme. And it actually got to a point where I was even kind of like, I feel a little ridiculous. Like nobody else around me is working out this hard or working this hard. So I would even try to hide it sometimes. Like I'm going to wake up early and get a workout in. I'm going to, whatever it was. And it kind of came to a crashing point. And I realized I'm not going to survive. I'm not going to make it out the other side. I actually can't be any more perfect, any more better to make me feel better or look better or do better. I'm actually just digging myself a deeper and deeper hole. And in my senior year of college, what's hard is I was in an environment that was highly competitive. I was at UCLA. So the average type of student that's there has kind of a natural bend in this direction anyway.
Yeah.
So it almost felt a little bit like I'm just keeping up with everybody around me. But like I said, we all have our different motivators. We all have our different things on the inside. But I realized I'm not doing this well, and I'm not sure anybody else around me is either, but I began to not be able to sleep at night. I began to struggle with insomnia. I began to have real physical problems, like health issues, and ultimately got to a spot where I wasn't able to physically work out anymore. I wasn't capable of doing the things I once did to cope. And it was almost this forcing season where I couldn't control. And I actually thought like I was going to lose my literal mind because I didn't know how to handle what was going on inside of me. I had no tools to process what were the emotions and the things and the beliefs and all of the stuff inside of me. So it felt overwhelming, right? It felt like, I don't think I can do this if I'm not able to use those coping mechanisms that I had. But they felt like they were stripped away from me because literally physically I couldn't keep up anymore. I was in so many different doctor's appointments and doing so many different types of physical therapy, trying to get to the root of the problem, where it wasn't actually a physical problem for me. It was I had to get to the root of the issue.
And I think that, well, when we're, because I'm in the arts world where we talk about storytelling a lot, and when we're talking about character development, like we ask, like, what is the character wanting to get, win, or achieve? And in your subconscious narrative, because we all have subconscious narratives, what when you're working out that much, you're hiding that you're working out, like, mm-hmm. because it's like, what do you think Ellie, 19-year-old Ellie or 18-year-old Ellie is trying to get, win or achieve?
Oh, what are you asking?
What do you feel like you were trying to, yeah.
I think there was a few things. I think there was a part of me that I thought that if she could just get a little bit more this or a little bit more like that, she would achieve some sort of peace. Deep down, I really wanted, like, I wanted to love myself, but I felt it came with conditions. And
yeah.
So I think there was a piece of that. It was a bit twisted. It's obviously not rooted in the truth, but I think subconsciously I was hoping that I would find some level of peace there.
Yeah. So interesting. I love that you use the word peace. For me, I think I did all those things because I wanted love. It's connected to what you're saying is like peace was conditional on, did you tick every box today?
Yes.
And for me, it's like love was conditional of, did you perform and do all these things to get love? And so it sounds like 22, moving to Reading, Northern California, like that started to challenge that thought process. So was there a significant moment where that started to shift for you?
Yeah, it felt, honestly, Ella, like it was almost forced, because kind of what I was explaining, that I'm curious how much longer it would have took me to put the pause, put some brakes on and actually get some help. Because it was kind of working for me in a weird way, right? Like I was surviving. I wasn't thriving, but I was surviving. So I think that season was actually the summer right before I moved to Reading. And I remember even having this moment right before I moved to Reading where it was like I was panic struck and I just couldn't even like think straight. And I was like, oh, am I even going to get to Reading? And my mom was like, honey, you're just going to pack your things in a bag. We're going to get in the car. We're going to drive. But it just felt like, what in the world? But it was like, I feel like in that season, in that moment, it was like almost like everything that once was, everything that I had based all of my beliefs on, were slowly crashing down. And I was just like unsure how they were going to rebuild. I had no idea how it was going to come out, what it was going to look like on the other side. So I don't know if I can remember an extremely specific moment, but I do remember in that season coming to this place where I knew I wasn't going to make it out. I wasn't going to be able to make the change that I needed. I remember journaling this in my journal. If I didn't have vision or the hope for it to look different, those seasons were dark. Like I was awake in the middle of the night, just like, God, is this, I really couldn't see it ever being any different. And I just remember needing vision and needing hope. And I didn't have that for myself. So it looked like leaning into the Lord a lot, which I came to a space where that's basically all we did all day was lean into the Lord for everything. Mm-hmm. So it was really in that season that, things inside of me began to shift. And I was in an environment that was really healthy, where people were really healthy and were comfortable talking about the hard things. So the things that I had once been so ashamed of, people were openly talking about. And I was like, what? People aren't embarrassed about this? People are, they don't have shame about this kind of stuff. Like it gave me hope. It gave me vision. Like seeing somebody that was willing to talk about the fact that they had been in my spot and overcome it, I would just grab hold of those testimonies. Like that will be me one day, even if I don't feel like it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so, as you're sharing, like I remember that same, I love that you talk about vision, because I think that like, being able to see that there's another way and that like this perfectionism isn't like, I don't know, there's another way to live life. I remember feeling the same thing because I'd come from a church where there was a lot of perfect looking people on stage. And yeah. I don't want to like, you know, like we don't want, I mean, I think that sometimes that can get a bad rap because I'm not trying to like, you know, shame that, but there was a lot of perfection and performance, like looking a certain way, acting a certain way. And what was breathtaking to me was seeing like human people, you know, sometimes not the best fashion, just a bit like human.
Yeah, and Reading like fashion.
Yeah, I remember seeing a few people that weren't necessarily like shiny in the sense of like Hollywood would maybe not call them.
Yeah,
but like,
yeah.
But I remember seeing like a beauty exude out of them, and it started to rewrite my view of what beauty is. And I think that people listening, like sometimes we're literally need a bit of a detox and a bit of a digital detox of what we're looking at to rewrite something in our subconscious that says, actually, like beauty isn't not having wrinkles or like, you know, all of that, or having regrowth.
Yeah.
And, you know, or like just seeing like, and it's really interesting, like, because I think, especially when you're younger, but it does creep into people in their 30s and 40s, like the thing of like cool, I always think like, you know, because some people are like, oh, they're the cool people. And mostly it's usually actually they're the secure people. Because I think sometimes the coolest people are actually the most secure people. And so I don't know, like, how have you learned to, and it's not that I think people aspire and try and have something outside of themselves to make them look cool or look secure. But how have you cultivated, you talked about vision, but how have you cultivated security? Because I think it's like a garden that we cultivate, you know?
Yes.
It's something that it's not like just because you're not in your early 20 years, it's not like all of a sudden I'm perfectly secure in every area. Like, so how do you cultivate, yeah, how do you cultivate security?
Yeah, I love that analogy of the garden because I feel like that's so true. You got to pick out those weeds sometimes because they try to creep back in, you know? So, and different seasons take on different needs, right? Like in the winter, I don't need to water my garden as much as I do in the summertime, right? So I feel like I've noticed just in the shifting seasons when I feel like I'm going maybe on a bit of a tangent, but I feel like I've noticed, the different shapes and forms of insecurity have come up in different ways in different seasons. And it's tempting to want to be hard on myself for the fact like, whoa, that was so weird. Why do I feel so insecure? That's such a yucky feeling inside of me. It's not like glamorous. Nobody's like excited about the fact they feel insecure, but having to almost validate the fact that just because it's coming up in this form, in this way, in this season, doesn't discount the breakthrough in a different season or doesn't somehow exit out. It didn't happen. But going, wait, it's actually just, it's another, and sometimes this almost frustrates you. Like healing's, it comes, it's like an onion. It comes in layers, but there's something almost, there's something actually really refreshing about that. If we realize actually there's a deeper part of my heart, there's a deeper part of my soul that this is working its way into. And so I'm going to have to get in the mud. I'm going to have to get deeper in with the weeds and start pulling them out. You know, I'm going to have to maybe get some tools to help me work on my garden a bit. So your analogy, I was like, wow, yes, that feels like exactly it. But you're asking specifically about, how I have found to kind of settle into security. Yeah. I wish that I could give some sort of like 10 points to feeling secure.
Totally.
But as I was sitting with this, I feel like a lot of when I began to experience a lot of the breakthrough, for me was when I almost stopped trying so hard to be good or to be something that I wasn't, and just being brutally honest with what was in front of me, with what was going on inside of me, and not trying to run away from it. I was actually thinking this morning about, I've been reading through Psalms, and in Psalms 40, you come to this verse at the beginning of the chapter, and David says something along the lines of, the Lord heard my cry and reached out for me and pulled me out of the slimy pit and out of the mud and mire, and he placed me on solid, secure foundation. And the two chapters before that, David is, he's just whining. He's just, God, where are you? And I like so relate to David, because I'm like, one day I feel like this and the next I feel like that. So I'm like, totally. Amen.
But David is my favorite.
He's just so honest. I'm like, but I had to get in those scriptures sometimes so I could just be honest with myself. Like, like you were talking about, like, it's not the perfect polished person that's up there preaching that just suddenly has it all together. Like yesterday they might have been in the pit. Like, God, are you going to give me a word today? Like, it's just the reality of our faith walk. And I had to get to a place where I could be honest with how I was actually feeling. But circling back to that, to David, there was this, I just had this like moment where I realized, I was like, wow, David was a wreck, an emotional wreck, you know, in the previous two chapters. And he comes to this place and he goes, I waited upon the Lord and he heard my cry. And it hit me. He waited. And he, it wasn't that he didn't discount the fact of how he felt or do something, or make a rash decision in his emotion or what he might be feeling, but he sat in it and he was honest with the Lord about how he felt, and he cried out to him. And in his waiting is when the Lord was able to do something and pull him out of that pit and place him on a firm foundation. And I just had this moment where I realized, so often we think in the waiting, nothing's happening. We think in the having to be really honest about our emotion, you know, come face to face. Nothing's distracting us. We are simply waiting. Like I'm thinking about before the days before we had our phone and we're like standing in the checkout line at the grocery store. Like you have nothing else to do but sit there and think about how you're doing, right? And I feel like there's a level of that. Like we sometimes have to come back to the place where we're comfortable. And I think for me, I had to get to a space that honestly I am still working on very much so, where I have to get to a place where I'm comfortable to wait in that space that actually allows things to come up to the surface and actually allows the Lord to lay a firm foundation that I can stand on. Because what I have had sitting down there in the depths of me is not firm, obviously, because someone sends me one weird text message or I get one weird look and suddenly I'm questioning my whole being, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, that is not a firm foundation. I don't know what it is. But sometimes those moments, we actually have to allow them to come up and we have to be honest about what we're feeling and experiencing for the Lord to put something different down beneath and actually stand on it. So I feel like it's been a lot of, it doesn't sound glamorous because it's not really glamorous to just sit there in your mess sometimes. But personally, I feel like I've had to get really okay with sitting in my mess sometimes, just going, okay, this is the reality of how I feel right now. This is, you know, the emotion that's coming up inside of me. And allowing the Lord to speak to that and do something with it versus busying myself or trying to make excuses for it or, you know, all of the other things that we possibly could do.
Yeah, I love that you use that scripture because, and especially like you're talking about, usually when we don't stop to listen to what God is saying, we will, our prover will take over or our, I'm going to work harder takes over. And I love that you're talking about number one, being honest, because I think that like I had actually judgment towards insecurity. Oh, that person's insecure or this person, oh, that's insecurity. And
it's,
I know,
not cute. Yeah.
It's And then but I realized like my judgment is actually like, puts some level of denial on the areas that I'm insecure. And then I can't really be honest about it. And then like, I can't actually have truth speak into the deepest place of me because I'm just in denial about where I'm insecure. Like, I know that was like such a thing for me to work through, like, because this confident person was something that I wanted to protect. And I realized, especially when I, you know, became an instructor or started leading things, I was like, oh, I'm actually more insecure than I thought I was.
And, the different seasons.
Different seasons. And I think, like, I was looking at the definition of true security is actually a thing called self-security. That's actually your accepting of your weakness. And but you show up confident anyway. And I think that is ultimately for me, like the searching for unconditional love, I just started to learn to love the places that I was insecure and wasn't going to shame myself or judge myself for those places. But have you kind of like in your journey, how has like self-judgment played into insecurity?
Such a good question. Yes, I so resonate with that, that same feeling of, I don't think if you asked me 10 years ago, if I was insecure, I would have been like, I'm so insecure. That's not, I never. No. I would have been like, absolutely not.
Like you said, the stereotype, we have a stereotype, that person's insecure. I'm not insecure.
And there's something so horrible about being insecure. And I think what you were saying about coming to a place where you almost accept the fact that you have places where you feel weak and you feel insecure in is actually really liberating, because you suddenly don't have to be the best. Like, that's a lot of pressure to put on yourself to have it all together, have to be the best, have to all the things. And so to get to a place where you actually realize it's actually so freeing to not have to be all the things, right? Like, we all have areas of growth, of course, that you'll want to look at and, you know, turn to and get help for. But the reality is there's just going to be places where you don't have it all together all the time. So I resonate with that. But the judging, the self-judgment. I recently heard this quote that, like, I feel like brought so much light to the whole idea of judgment. And somebody said something along the lines of, you judge what you're scared of. And I realized judgment is often this thing that we use almost as a protector. It's this thing that allows us to get on a high horse where we're suddenly a lot bigger and bolder and braver than that little small thing that we're actually so terrified of. And it's this weird dynamic that we get ourselves in where we think we're better, but we're actually just terrified. It's kind of like the bully, like, right? The bully is often like the super tender, scared person, but he comes across really brash, you know, brash and bold. And that self-judgment, I think hearing that quote has made me realize, wow, the places that I'm so judgmental on myself for are so much the areas that I'm just terrified of. I'm scared to look up. They're too scary to look up, you know, look at in the face. And I think one of the things that's kind of helped me in that process, because I think that voice obviously still comes up inside of me sometimes, right? Where you're like, oh, wait, what, how am I speaking to myself? What is it feeling right now? And I feel like I learned, I feel like for a long time I tried to just shut that off and just shut it out and, you know, pray all the prayers and read all the scriptures over my mind and all the things. And I actually, when I began to grow curious about it, I found so much more healing in that process than constantly just trying to shove it away. Because when I grew curious, I could question and I could begin to see the things that it was afraid of. I could begin to, it didn't seem so daunting. It didn't feel like a constant battle inside as much as what's your fear? What are you afraid of? Versus allowing myself to be whiplashed by that. all the time. Because that's an exhausting experience.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, it's so good. I love that you bring up fear, because I think that our sense of security is actually a human need. It's like a basic human need of like feeling like secure financially, or having a home out over our head, and like feeling like we know our place with people, like, like you mentioned before, like getting a text and it triggers insecurity. And I love that you bring up how fear plays a role in like judgment and all of that. Cause I think a lot of the times we're not really aware that we're afraid. And like, actually I kind of love you to give an example, let's say, cause a triggering text is so common for humans. It's a part of the human experience.
Oh my Lord.
We get a message. Like I even know, like I've gotten, cause I'm in a season of transition, like I'll wake up cause California is already the day has started, and I'll wake up to all these texts. And if I don't just take a minute to be, I'll read those texts through an insecurity. So let's break it down, because I feel like this is a relevant trigger for people. But like when, you know, let's say you get a text that triggers fear or insecurity, like what's your process with that? Maybe incorporating like what you do in the Psalms or whatever, like how would you work through anything that comes up with a triggering text?
A real practical.
Because I think some people are like, here's some big concepts about being confident, get granular.
A triggering text, a triggering encounter. I wish that they were didn't happen so often, but they do. You're saying, they come up. A really practical way. I'm trying to think of actually just like a really maybe like a recent experience that I've had, but I think for myself, when I receive a text like that, well, I feel like time and time again, I've had to learn, okay, wait, maybe taking myself out of this experience that I'm having, and maybe where's the other person coming from? Because you can get really caught up in your own, how you're receiving it versus maybe how they meant to send that. But that's really very nitty gritty in regard to like receiving a text message. But
that's really good point there. I think insecurity, because we're trying to create a sense of safety, is like we go straight to how do I protect myself? And so we don't even think that there could be another narrative coming on the other side. So I even think that's so helpful.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of trying to get a higher perspective or a bigger perspective. But I'm like, I think about even just in marriage, because that's probably the place I get triggered the most, right? It's the person that's closest to me.
Totally.
And it actually is like the person that can do this so well, I'm like, one day. But the fine art of actually, it's almost like for me, it's really easy for my emotions to become really dysregulated, right? So if I feel that level of the thought comes to mind, oh my gosh, this person thinks I'm an idiot, or, you know, whatever, they're totally misunderstanding where I'm coming from. And now I'm triggered. My emotions like spike, and suddenly I'm actually like not even able to see clearly or feel clearly. And sometimes for me, it looks like literally setting down whatever that experience is, whether it's an email, a text message, an encounter that I'm having with my husband, and leaving the situation for a moment to collect myself. Because for me, like insecurity, that is often such an emotional reaction that I have versus any level of logic. So going to a place where I can like connect with my heart, like where am I feeling this emotion in my body? For me, it's often in my chest when I'm feeling really anxious about something, right? And you're just like, I just need to escape this and just get it out. And going to a place where I can like almost check in with myself, with my emotion, with what's going inside my body, and coming to a place where I can find some level of peace. And for me, if I'm not, and obviously inviting the Lord into this process, but if it's taking me a long time to get to that place, where I can find like logic and peace and reason within responding to that person, or feeling like I can come to some level of, you know, a plan of a strategy for whatever problem that I'm facing, whatever's triggered me. I often bring in people to my process to help me see differently, right? So if I'm not able to get to that space between me and myself and the Lord, I bring in wise people into my life that I really trust that can help me see differently, or process what's going on inside of me. Because sometimes we get stuck. Sometimes we kind of get stuck on an emotional loop. So I guess for bigger moments where I'm feeling triggered, feeling insecure, I bring that to the other people to help me in that
process. I love that. Yeah. That's so good, because so many people don't do that. I love that you talk about regulating, and it comes back to what you were talking about in the Psalms of like the Psalms are such a great framework and guidebook of how to actually regulate your emotions. because a lot of the times, like you were mentioning, like you have a level of self-awareness, which I think plays a huge role of like, oh, I'm actually triggered. Like some people don't even know they're triggered, and then they're building up narratives about themselves and other people. And I think, just you talking about bringing in other people to challenge your perspective, like we have to let go of the narrative that maybe self-protects us in that moment and like invite other people in. And I love that you bring up that point. That's so good. You actually really as a human just radiate a beautiful confidence that is so approachable and human. That's what I love about you, Ellie. And and I just think like I've watched you sort of, you are someone that definitely radiates a beautiful confidence, and it just shows that you've just done so much work on yourself and all of that. But you've gone from working for, we talk about this a bit, like you've worked for someone else, and now you're shifting into actually working on your own projects. And I think that putting yourself out there on social media is a very, like it triggers the insecurity thing, I would say. And so like, how have you gone on like, cause you are very consistent and you show up and you're also really honest and authentic and tell real life stories. Tell me a bit about like your journey in that of, like learning how to find your confidence in even just showing up on social media.
Yeah. I think social media is such an interesting world, but I think a little bit of, I come back to the why lot in showing up on social media. And a lot of it for myself has been a bit of a journey just with the Lord and feeling like this is something I'm supposed to be doing in this season. But a lot of the why goes back to, I remember feeling so alone in my journey and feeling like I was the only person on the planet that had problems or had these types of problems. And I remember being 20 years old and finding this one YouTuber that just was like brutally honest about things she was going through and walking through that I was experiencing, and thinking, oh my gosh, I thought for years I've been alone and there's somebody else out there that's going through this. And it almost like, in a way, I felt like dismantled the enemy's power over me, right? Because something had been hidden in the dark and felt really alone in it. And I began to realize, he convinced me I'm the only one and I'm not the only one.
Wow.
And so a lot of the times when I began to like, should I share this? This is, you know, and I'm not sharing like every detail of my life, but I am sharing things that are very, very real and not like polished and beautiful. And I go back to that why a lot of this is why. And I think sometimes when we have a reason beyond ourselves, it makes it easier to do it. And I think even coming to a place, and this kind of circles back to even like going on the journey of trying to confront the things that, you know, the insecurities, it was finding a reason almost with out of myself that kind of was that charge to do it. And I think that the same has kind of been applied to the realm of social media of, I don't want to do this for, if I would, I wouldn't be posting just for myself, but also it's so real, Ellen, you know how this goes, but I had a post where lots of different types of beliefs and people and thoughts came back to me. And it totally took me to a moment where I was like, whoa, am I messed up in the head? You know, like all the things. And it set me into space. But I'm like, I think that actually moments of doubt are like inevitable in life. There's going to be times that we doubt ourselves. And I actually think it's almost healthy to have moments where we question ourselves to a degree, because if we thought we knew everything, if we thought we got it right all the time, we'd be really hard to receive, yeah, to give and be able to receive any level of feedback. So social media, I think, strangely, it almost feels like there's a grace from the Lord to do it. But I definitely go back to the why making sure I feel solidified in the truth of the Lord when you're showing up to a space where there's all different types of people and thoughts and opinions out there.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I think part of growing in security is being comfortable in being seen. And right now in our day and age, social media is that place. And I think sometimes we can have some judgment of like, gee, they're just into themselves or there can be this like self-centered kind of judgments. And it's actually like you were saying, like, I remember, when I moved countries, I did not see any stories of like, and that was like 10 years ago. So it wasn't like bloggers and YouTubers were as big then, but I remember feeling like, who is talking about real things? Like, I need to like feel a sense of like I'm not alone in this. And I love that that is your why. Mm-hmm. And really learning, I think I've watched you like grow in confidence of like, well, this is just who I am. I'm becoming more and more unapologetic and I'm accepting that some people are not for me. And that's right. Security. Like, okay, some people are not going to agree with me. And so that's really cool that you shared that. Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. That's so cool. So it's like definitely the Wild West out there on the social media for sure. So I just sort of in closing, one of our pastors, Bill Johnson, says insecurity is wrong security exposed. I'd love to know what you think about that quote.
I mean, I feel like, well, anything Bill Johnson says, right, is like
that's
gold.
Right. We should all sit up and pay attention for sure.
Yes. I feel like it's such a truth-filled way of explaining it, because insecurity is often, like he says, it is just it's telling of where your security is rooted in, right? It's telling of what your foundation is. And so I think if you come to a place where you're recognizing, we've talked lots about this today, but instead of the judgmental, the frustrated with yourself about the fact that you're feeling some level of insecurity versus taking on sort of the hat of, oh, that's really interesting. It's actually just revealing that where my security is at is not in the right place. It's not where it's supposed to be. And it's actually this really revealing and telling, so that you can be aware of it and begin to put your security where it should be, right? And the truth of the Lord and his presence in his heart for you and his thoughts for you. So I'm like, of course, Bill Johnson says it all, right? I would say that wraps it up with a beautiful bow.
Yeah.
That is what
security is. And then we get to, like, you to use your word, we get to get curious about what's happening around that area. Yeah. And the beautiful thing is, like, I want our listeners to really hear that you can repair the places inside you that feel insecure. Like, you can actually go on a repair journey, and hopefully from listening to both of our stories today, that people can actually be invited into, like, oh, there's a place that I can actually be at peace, or know I'm loved, or know that I'm accepted without having it together. Yes. Like, you know, and so I love that you're sharing that. And in closing, being that, you know, the podcast is called The Next Brave Thing, so I'd love you to share what's your next brave thing, Ellie?
Oh, my next
brave thing. Yeah, what is it?
Oh, my goodness. What is my next brave thing? Well, my next brave thing, I have felt in this season to be really brave in friendships and cultivating and pursuing intentional friendships, because we know friendships in adulthood can be so interesting.
Yeah.
And it's challenging to make, right? They're not always as organic as they are in school days. So I have, surprisingly, I've been shocked by how much bravery it takes. Mm-hmm. That's my next brave thing, is to be really intentional in friendships.
Yes.
Pursuing
that. Oh, yeah. I love that. And I should probably get you and Jess and Destiny maybe on the podcast to just talk about, like, your friendship and, like, how you've cultivated that. And how I met you, Ali, was actually through Jessica Wilmot, who actually is on the podcast, guys, in the earlier season. She helped me with this podcast, remember?
She's one of my best.
She is, and she's so good at friendship. She's so good at cultivating connection. And I probably should get you girls on, because it's definitely a space, like, learning how to do friendship. Like, we need a bit more of a roadmap for when we finish school and get out of our organized structures.
Jess has taught me everything I know about friendship, but truly she is excellent at it. And she's now a long distance friend, but even in the long distance, I'm like, this girl, she amazes me. She has really taught me what it looks like to be a true friend and how to do it in all the shifting seasons. That's right. I forgot that she was.
Oh my gosh. That's so sweet. Well, Ali, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. And and so our listeners can actually go ahead, and I'm going to put the links to sign up for your detox, insecurity detox, and your Instagram. And I'm sure that you'll be running another round of mentorship programs. And the beautiful thing is, guys, that's online. So you can be anywhere in the world and join that mentorship program.
Yes.
And I think we need more people speaking, healthy people speaking into our lives. So that's such a great opportunity if someone wanted to go after that for a season. But just sort of in wrapping up, I'd love for you to just share about what they're going to find in this 3-day insecurity detox.
Yeah, in this 3-day insecurity detox, it's almost like a 3-day challenge to kind of walk through a lot of the things we talked about today, but really confronting the areas of your life where maybe there's been lies that you've been believing, getting, just maybe even becoming aware of the places in your heart that there's been insecurity, and then walking you through some sort of activations and exercises that you can put into daily practice to begin to actually feel that shift inside of yourself, where you feel like those belief systems are being uprooted and real truth is being solidified within you, so you can walk out in real confidence and security in your life.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm even just thinking, like, I have, you know, some beautiful moms who have teenage girls or girls that are in college in their early 20s. And I just even encourage you to get your daughters to sign up for this. And that would be a good on-ramp to, anyone can sign up for it. But I think that I don't know, if I had a daughter that was coming out of college feeling a bit disoriented, like, where, what am I doing with my life, or even finishing high school, I'd be like, get in this mentorship program before you make any decisions for your life. And so have someone else that's not mom to speak into your life. And so, so I highly recommend that. I fully trust your voice in people's life. And but thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been such a treat.
Oh, yeah. Ella. Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.